So Richard Dawkins, a Muslim philosopher, an evangelical Christian, and a Jewish rabbi, all walk into the woods. This is not a joke. Welcome to the Texas Titans podcast. This is a setup for the subject of today's conversation with my guest, Austin Udaly. Austin Udaly is one of the most successful young entrepreneurs I've had the opportunity to visit with and befriend. And I think you're going to enjoy listening to his story of entrepreneurship and business and sure how he did well monetarily in that space. But what I think you're really going to be fascinated with is what Austin is working on now. Austin is currently in the production stages of a documentary called Uncommon Fellows, in which he has gathered together, if you know who Richard Dawkins is, he is one of the foremost atheist intellectuals and authors of our time. Arguing in the academic sense against the theory of intelligent design and in favor of evolution. And then so Austin has been able to get Richard Dawkins to agree to be a part of this project, along with Tim Keller, who is one of the most prominent evangelical Christians and authors of our time, as well as a Jewish rabbi, a very prominent Muslim philosopher and thinker. And they're going to go basically into the mountains and spend a number of days together. We'll talk about that in the podcast, not debating their ideas, not trying to decide who's right, who's wrong, what exists, what does not exist, but instead just have conversations and understand each other better, because this is where Austin's heart is at this point in his life. For him, it's no longer about starting another company, just making more money for the sake of making more money, but being a steward of those resources and trying to do good with it. And he believes that this is a purposeful endeavor that he can take on and do good for the world. And so I think you're going to really enjoy listening to his heart and his story on this matter, because let's face it, there's not a lot of just good conversation going on right now, and in our country in particular. It's pretty much, if you don't agree with me, then you must be my enemy. There once was a time when we could sit down and talk and go, oh, you think differently than me? Well, that's cool. And I think differently than you, and that's cool. But maybe we can still learn something from each other. That's not happening much these days. Instead, it's, oh, you don't agree with me? Well, you must be my enemy. So therefore, we're done. And it shuts down all conversation. So I think this is going to be a really, really cool project. It's going to be called Uncommon Fellows. It's in the production stages right now. And so whenever that actually releases, I'll definitely give you all updates. But anyway, this was a great conversation. It's a long conversation about business, entrepreneurship, philosophy. We covered a whole array of topics. Austin is a passionate and very, very fun guy to talk to. So I think you're going to really get engaged and enjoy this interview. It was one of my favorites. And so sit back, enjoy my conversation with entrepreneur and documentary film producer, Austin Udaly. I hope your 2020 is off to a fantastic start. Thank you for letting the Texas Titans podcast be a part of it. Thanks. Austin Udaly, how are you, brother?
Doing great, Jason. Excited to be here. It's a beautiful day here in Dallas, Texas. Well, it's gray, but it's nice. But
yeah, it's a little gray. It's a little gray. But, well, I want to tell you that I'm so grateful for you being on the podcast. And, man, you've done so many things. It's kind of hard to figure out even where to start. But here's what I want to do with you, just from what I've gotten to know about you over a short period of time, is I want to talk about your entrepreneurial endeavors. So let's talk a little bit about your oil and gas endeavors and what that looked like. But then I want to spend a lot of time, or the lion's share of time, on anything you want to cover. But Uncommon Fellows, I think, is something that is it's timely, the project itself. I want as many people to know about it as possible. So if my little corner of the universe that I occupy with the Texas Titans podcast can bring attention to that, I want to leverage it for that. So I really want to dive into the origin of that project. But before we get there, let's just cover some of the basics. Where are you from? How'd you get started? You've had an incredibly successful entrepreneurial career, everything from oil and gas to a dating app, you know, and several things in between. So let's just start where your story begins. Go.
Absolutely. And let me just start by thanking you for driving all the way from Tyler today.
Absolutely, man.
Meeting here. This is out of your way, and it's great timing, you know, me being in town. So thank you.
I'm grateful.
And I want to say to the listeners that what Jason is doing is very important work, and his podcast, Telling Stories, I think is amazing. And so, tip my hat to you for doing this.
Thanks,
so,
Austin. I appreciate it.
So, Austin Udaley, I'm 36 years old. I was born December 1983 here in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm a fifth generation Texan. Went to Pantego Christian Academy in high school. Have an amazing group of friends still from Pantego. We had our, you know, we get together every year out in West Texas for a little rendezvous. I went to Oklahoma State University, where I graduated in 2006. I'm a proud cowboy.
Just to let you know, I tried to convince both of my girls to become Pokes, and because I love Stillwater, I love the school, and I couldn't. Abby, I thought I might have a chance, but man, she couldn't have gone to a more opposite environment. She ended up in Boulder, Colorado. But
hey, can't blame her for wanting to have the flat irons out the back door. I can tell you one thing about Stillwater. Don't have the flat irons. It's pretty darn flat.
Well, and while you're talking about that, do you happen to know a guy named Bruce Redden by chance?
Bruce Redden. I don't
say Bruce that. Is a little, he's younger than me. He's closer to your age, but Bruce was a place kicker for OSU, one of my closest friends from political days, and was a soccer player that was literally, they went into the stadium. They're just goofing off, kicking field goals, and ends up, one of the coaches sees him, the special teams coach sees him and says, hey, what are y'all doing? Says, oh, sorry, we're just kicking field goals. He says, we'll kick another one. And they end up signing him, and he ends up being the place kicker for
What year was that?
I want to say it had to have been probably 04, 05-ish, maybe.
And I'd had some mutual friends. I actually I walked on the football team my freshman year. Les Miles was coach. I mean, I basically just, you know, got my butt kicked on scout team every day. But, you know, and you realize, like, oh, these guys are a little different caliber athlete than me, and I decided to have a regular college career. Yeah. But I bet you'd have some mutual friends with him.
Yeah, because I can't remember, like I said, I'm almost positive he's very close, you know, plus or minus on either side of 36. So anyway, but I just was wondering about that.
Yeah, no, I'll have to ping a couple. I mean, I still keep up with a couple buddies from the team. I'll ping them.
But okay. Yeah. So anyway, so you're at OSU, and OSU obviously known for producing, I mean, you know, Boone Pickens aside, known for producing a lot of oil and gas professionals. Is that where that started, or?
No. It's kind of a crazy story how it started. I wasn't a great college student. I mean, I got my squeaked out my C's in finance and accounting, and I was like, man, I don't know. You know, I wanted to be in the business, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. Well, the only book the only class I ever liked was entrepreneurship, and I read the whole book, and I was like, well, I don't even know what this means, but maybe this is something I should try if I liked it. And the way that I got into oil and gas is a bit, happened chance, to be honest. I was summer going into my senior year of college, I made it down to the final 48 contestants for Survivor, the TV show.
Really?
Yeah, really random. And it's a funny story. I was at like a bar in Arlington. I never watched the show before. I'm at a bar. My friend's working at the bar, and she's like, oh, y'all to come do this open casting call tomorrow for Survivor. So I literally just showed up and did like the speech from Braveheart. And they like, I kept making it the next round. So I go, you know, I kind of couldn't plan on doing an internship that summer because I made the final 48 and they're going to choose 30. So right. I was like, well, I think I'm a shoe-in. You know, I'm like 20 years old or whatever. I'm like, oh, this will be great. I'll get famous, you know. And anyways, I find out I don't get it like 2 days before school gets out. And I'm just totally like down in the dumps. I call my dad and I'm like, Dad, I don't know. I don't have an internship lined up. You know, all my friends are got these cool internships and blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know anything I could even do? Can I just work? Maybe I'll work for a lawn business, you know? And he's like, well, my dad, you know, he's real estate background. He goes, well, you know, there's some deal called the Barnett Shale going on, you know? Like, he goes, I've got a friend from church, a guy named Brett Austin, who's a very dear friend and a mentor. He goes, let me see if Brett would maybe hire you by the hour. He's like, I've always been interested and thought that energy business was pretty fun deal. And I was like, well, yeah. Just tell me to go where to meet Brett. And so anyways, I ended up getting on as an intern that summer, doing title research, doing lease checks for a very small, little known company then, which was called Chesapeake Exploration. And, in a haphazard, very lucky way, I was one of the first 30 landmen in the courthouse in Tarrant County.
Wow.
And so, I really loved the work. I mean, it's kind of like a big jigsaw puzzle. You're doing title research, looking at these deeds from 1890 and,
yeah.
You know, you're going out and negotiating with landowners and buying leases, and that's fun because you get to know people that you never would have met. And so I just fell in love with it, and they offered me a job when they said, hey, if you graduate, you got a job if you want to come back. And so I just, my senior year, I was like, well, I guess that's what I'm going to do, because I didn't know what else I was going to do. So right. That's how I got into the energy business and was very, very lucky to get into it.
So when was your first entrepreneurial venture in the oil and gas business? Did you just start out as an independent landman?
Yeah, I was working for a group called Crew Land Research, and they were a independent contractor out of Houston. Great guys. We were a Chesapeake contractor. So we were just doing work for Chesapeake.
Yep.
And I did 3 years at Crew Land, and kind of my mindset was like, I want to learn as much as I can. And then I was seeing a lot of these guys, and you read about it in the paper. It's guys like, some of the Trevor East Jones and Auburn Clinton, and I'm seeing these guys going like, well, they're just going out and buying leases over here. And then all of a sudden they hold them for 6 months and they buy them for $3,000. They sell them for $10,000. It's like, well, I can do that. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of thinking like, and my mentor Brett had encouraged me like, hey, be coming up with ideas, And at that time, I remember thinking like, oh, if I come up with an idea, someone else has had it, because there's so many smart people. Right. And I'll never forget the first idea I had. And it was actually like an original idea, and it was to buy mineral rights underneath I-20 and I-30. And back in the 70s, when the state came in and kind of condemned it and told the landowners, like, you kind of got to sell this to us, the mineral owners probably didn't even know it. No one had ever drilled for oil and gas in Fort Worth until 2004.
Right.
I mean, up in the northern part of the Fort Worth Basin, but not in Fort Worth proper.
Yeah.
And there was a boilerplate deed where they were selling their surface, but they got to keep their minerals. So I was reaching out to these people under the highway, and they didn't even know they owned these minerals. So anyways, no one else had ever tried that. And then I was like, well, if I can have that original idea, no one else thought of it, what else could I do? So then I kind of got to this point where like I learned everything I could learn, and I felt like I at the time I was following, I've got to do a tip of the cap to Keith Mock at GoHaynesvilleShale.com, who was the first guy to start a mineral owner blog. And, what Keith did is, a lot of times in these plays, mineral owners don't know what's going on. Like let's say XYZ oil company's offering $5,000 an acre up here. Well, 8 miles down the road, they're offering 12.
Right.
But those people don't know each other.
Right.
So these mineral owners were getting on there talking about their offers. And so they're helping each other like get better deals and negotiate better leases. Well, what I did is I was like, I'd go on there and be like, I'd be watching these conversations, and I could see the legal descriptions. People would be like, I'm in section blah, 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 and I get this lease offer, and it's from X. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go down the road and go try and lease right next to him, right? And so that was my first idea. I had a target in Sabine Parish, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Chesapeake had been sweeping south leasing, and so, I was like seeing all these other guys do it. I was like, well, this doesn't seem too hard, Just go out there and negotiate some leases and hold it for a couple of months, then we'll sell it to Chesapeake and make a profit. Well, the problem was I had saved up some money, but not very much. I'd saved up, I think my first, $20,000. Well, yeah. You're going to not even buy, a lease at the time was $3,000 an acre. So it's like, well, you're not going to get much. So I went back to my mentor, Brett, and I was like, Brett, I think I've got a bead on this area, but I don't have any money.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody that want to come do this with me? And while Brett, you know, had a high school friend, a dear friend of mine named Gil Cheeseman down in Houston, and Gil, you know, brought his buddies in. These are longtime oil and gas guys, and they believed in me, which gave me the belief in myself. And so I just drove out to Sabine Parish and got a hotel and just started knocking on doors. And so, you know, and a really kind of funny story, and I love telling this story. I was telling this story to shout out to my friend Andrew Hunt, who's doing an amazing thing called Happy Golf. It'll be like a Top Golf, but in smaller markets. And, you know, I'm telling this to Andrew because this is kind of his family. And, you know, if you're here in Dallas, you know who the Hunt family is. And, like, you know, there's this old, the first door I ever went to, and this is a true story. I see this guy, I'm driving past, he's got this long, flowing mullet, glorious mullet, just robust. And
wow. Glorious and robust, yeah. To describe a mullet.
And he just, I'm like looking around, he smiles at me, he's like, gives me this big wave, and I was like, dang it, you daily go talk to him. Like, what do you got to lose? So I go talk to this guy, and I'm laying out my maps. I'm, you know, and we're like a nothing company. Everybody's heard of Chesapeake, you know, right. And we had this entity name we made called Patmos Production. And the grandmother comes out from the back of the house, and she's like 89. And I start talking, and you can't make this stuff up. She goes, young man, I'm just going to stop you real quick. She goes, last time somebody came through here asking about an oil lease, his name was Harrelson Lafayette Hunt. And I said, really?
Wow.
I said, Harrelson Hunt was the last person that offered you a lease? She goes, he did. I don't think the deal ever worked out. And I was like, well, maybe I can get you guys a deal. Sure enough, the next day I go in the courthouse and there's Placid oil leases filed. And I was like, man, this is kind of cool, right?
Wow.
So we end up getting that deal by a couple other leases. And we put up, you know, $2 million. And I'm just like, you know, I'm 24, you know, and I'm just, you're dreaming of like, oh, we're going to sell this for a fortune. Because that's how it had gone. I mean, lease bonus prices at the time. And I say this, this was the last great American land rush. Like, mm-hmm. Right, when I started leasing when I was 22, we were offering $1,000 an acre. And I'm not kidding you. At that time in the Haynesville, leases were trading for $30,000 an acre.
Wow.
So if you had 100 acres, just to sign a lease, just to get a signing bonus, and you're just like a farmer who's got 100 acres, write you a check for $3 million, peel it off, you know, and then you get the 20% royalty. So like all these mineral, this is a frenzy. So it was fun. I mean, it was like and like that was where I was like having a blast.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because you're helping out the mineral owners, you're helping them spread money into those communities. Now, you know, people say what they will about the oil business, and not everybody in the oil business is upright. But there's, you know, I'll say this about the oil business: since I've gotten the consumer product business, I have been taken advantage of in a big way 3 times.
Really?
One of the companies, you would know who it is. Mm. And it's the worst I've ever been treated in my life. Mm. I did over $140 million in the oil patch and acquisitions. Probably about half of that was on like a handshake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I give you my word and that's a deal. Yep. Let's send an email so we remember what the deal is, right? If I have to worry about papering up 50 pages of the legal docs, I probably shouldn't be doing the deal with you. Like, right? If a deal is a deal, then the deal's a deal. So anyways, I digress. But anyways, you know, I'm just licking my chops. And all of a sudden, the 2008 crash happens. And leases go dead quiet. And I'll never forget, Brett calls me. He goes, Austin, I think we're sunk. You know, well, it's a good and bad thing, but I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, and we don't really give up very easily. So, like, the next 8 months, and I felt overwhelming pressure because I had come up with this idea. These guys had put up, in my mind, was, and it is, it's a stinking fortune, and we're going to lose $2 million. So, like, I'm doing everything I can. I mean, and to make a super long story short, back to Keith Mock. Keith, I owe you, buddy. I said, Keith puts up a thing on Go Haynesville Shell. He said, hey, guys, there's a conference called Doug coming up in Fort Worth. And I will pay, and Keith lived in D.C. at the time. He said, I will pay some, or I will buy someone a ticket to go if you will write a blog about what all their people are talking about. Well, it was an $800 ticket. I could not afford that ticket. And so I just said, Keith, I've never written a blog, wrote a blog before in my life. I still don't know how to write a blog. I'm a terrible writer. But I will go and I will attempt to write a blog as best I can. And he goes, no one else did it. And I was like, so I go. And it's me, 25-year-old Austin, up with all these oil and gas CEOs and executives. And I'm learning about this stuff. And, you know, anyways, people are at those conferences. These companies are, you've got CEOs telling about what they're working on because they're trying to attract public money to their projects.
Right.
Well, people are talking about what they're working on. And I'm able to be like, oh, that's really cool. That well's really good. And it's giving me ideas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have those moments in your career where you're like, you remember back and it could have gone one way or the other, right? You know what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there was a guy named Dick Stoneburner that was giving it. So like there's this big presentation and then Dick goes to the side room to give like a side presentation for the press. Well, the leases that we had bought, I knew that their company, Petrohawk, had leases in that area. And so it's super intimidating. After the thing, I go up to Dick, who's the like COO, and I'm shaking in my boots. And I go, Dick, I'm Austin Udaly. We have these leases in Sabine Parish. Are you guys looking to buy? And he's like, here's my card, email me. Well, I kid you not. We went like 2 weeks later, we had no one else wanted these leases in the country. And it just so happened Petrohawk made a deal with some foreign entity or something like that, and they were buying out a portion of their acreage so they could then go out and pay more because they were making more, and we 2X'd. And and I, you know, like, I did not make a lot of money off that, but it was my first deal where I had a little share of profit. And like, that was the most fun thing ever because like, right, you think like, oh, I can't go create this. But like, literally I had come up with the idea. I had in my little network, which I didn't know anybody that had money, but I just had my mentor and he brought in his people. And then because I just didn't throw in the towel, by happen chance, we sell this and make a profit. And so then, you know, once that happened, all those investors were like, hey, Austin, what's your next idea? And then that's, you know, so from 2000, then I got into, you know, shout out to John Osborne and Todd Wagner. They invited me into the mineral business. And they there's some family offices from Wichita Falls that are great guys that wanted to go out and buy minerals in the Haynesville. Well, at that time, buying minerals in shale plays was kind of a new concept. You know, historically, like when you bought minerals, you had to kind of like buy producing minerals or like, you know, historically in the oil patch, for every four wells you drill, three are going to be dry holes.
Right.
And so like, it's very risky to go out and buy minerals unless you have kind of some geology. Mm-hmm. But what happened in the shale plays is you had a blanket formation across three counties. And so, you know, look at that map. You could buy minerals anywhere on that map. It's just a matter of, is it going to be a really good well or kind of a crappy well? Is it going to get drilled next year or in 8 years? Right. So there's a timing. So they knew I had just been out to the Haynesville and kind of knew landowners out there. I'd spent 8 months on that leasing project. And so, you know, they offered me a deal and, you know, it was a fair deal. It wasn't like pie in the sky deal, but like my mentor, Brett Austin, who had said, I said, Brett, you know, I'm 25. I'm debating if I should just go back and work for, like, at the time you could make a really big day rate, like just doing title research, you know, like $400 a day.
Right.
And to me, that was like, you know, I never thought in a million years I'd make that much money in a day. But
I lost a lot of realtors to, you know, they weren't selling well. So when the oil patch got good, they became land men.
Right.
Because they could. They could go get a trailer, you know, a travel trailer, hook it to the truck. I'll go wherever you tell me to go for $400 a day, I'm in. You know?
Yeah, and that's, you know, what happens is they pay land men so much because those jobs dry up so quick.
Yeah.
They last a couple months usually. Yeah. That's why this shale era was unique. Yeah. And So, you know, I said, Brett, I'm debating. I mean, do I want to go do this deal? Because I basically, like, they were paying me a much reduced day rate, but I got a piece of every deal. And so, you know, and I'll never forget, I forget which burger place we were at in Fort Worth. And he goes, you know, Austin, he said, he said, if there's one thing I can tell you, I'm still working for a salary. And Brett's, you know, 55, 58, got three kiddos, lives mm-hmm. in Toledo. He said, I'm still working for a salary. And all my friends that started buying mineral rights in their 20s don't really have to work anymore. Mm-hmm. And so he said, if that tells you anything, maybe you ought to go learn how to do this. So I went out there, cut my teeth. In hindsight, like, if I knew what I knew now, we could have done way better. But I didn't know what, you know, it's a totally different deal. If I go approach 100 mineral owners, let's say you had 100 acres out in Nacogdoches County. Mm-hmm. And I come to you, and I'm from Fort Worth, and I got my cowboy boots on. And I say, hey, sir, I represent ExxonMobil. We want to sign an oil and gas lease. We're going to pay you a $300,000 signing bonus just to sign your name. It's a three-year lease. And you, we're going to spend $8 million to drill a well, and you get 20% of the proceeds out of the well. Well, you're like, sign me up, right? Like, I approach 100 mineral owners to sign leases. I'm going to get 99 to sign the lease. Mm-hmm. The one person that doesn't is probably, like, unfortunately, like, mentally unstable or something. Right. Or, like, you know, because there are people that, like, are so wealthy they don't want a well on their land. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But for the most part, in the shale era, I mean, all these places we're looking at, these are farmers that are scratching a living by. So, like, now, if I approach you and you've got your 100 acres and I say, you know, hey, Jason, I'm here from Fort Worth and I got my boots on and I'm here to buy your mineral rights that have been in your family for 40 years.
Yeah.
Well, then it becomes like, what's this guy know that I don't know? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, everybody's mm-hmm. been told their whole life, never, 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 never sell minerals.
Right.
Right. So it was, I was a marketing major at OSU. And so I was thinking about like, well, how do I, these people, they were a little bit, a lot of times when people sign a lease, it's Beverly Hillbillies in their mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I know mine's got the gusher, right? Uh-huh,
right?
Well, if you look at all the shale plays that ever got leased, so like just to give you an example, let's use the Utica Shale, for instance, in Ohio, which is where I went to 4 years later. And I lived in a small town for a year up there. Probably 2 million acres got leased, mm-hmm. and everybody signed the lease and thought Beverly Hillbillies. Well, only 400,000 acres ended up being drillable.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is go, and I'm spending way too much time on this, but we would go and try and make offers to all 10,000 mineral owners. And we were trying to spread our risk out because, like, you know, if I put $1 million in one tract, what if that track's got a fault or it's a dry hole? Mm-hmm. Like, man, that's bad. So, you know, what we would do is we would go to a map like that and say, we want to spend that $1 million in 50 different acquisitions, right? You're spreading risk out.
Sure.
And it's a win-win for the mineral owner because what I would do is I would go to the mineral owner and, you know, get to know him and say, look, you know, here's the thing. Today, like, let's say it's that 100 acres that you got. And at the time in the Haynesville, I could offer you $700,000 for it. Now, if you were like in your 80s and you didn't have any kids and you didn't want to wait around and see if they were going to drill, you might take it. But if you were in your 50s, what I'd say to you is this. Look, that's $700,000 cash that I'd offer you. Now, if you took that $700,000 cash and you went into the local investment advisor's office and you said, hey, I want to invest this. And he said, good. We're going to put it all on one oil well. You'd walk out of the office. But that's what you're doing if you don't divest a portion of your minerals to diversify. So mm-hmm. I started this program where I would try and say, hey, don't sell me all your minerals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sell me 25%, 30%, 50%. Take some guaranteed cash off the table, put it in the bank, buy some gold and silver, buy some real estate, buy your dream home in Florida, mm-hmm. and then keep the other half. And then if they drill it and it's a dry hole, well, you mitigated your risk.
Absolutely.
And if they drill it and it's not, well, it's gravy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because this was like literally manna from heaven. Like if you look at that map of what county is that? Well, that's Midland. If there was a Ward County map in here, and that's where my family's originally from, to give you an example, my great-great-grandfather had a ranch out there. We still owned some mineral rights out in Ward County. It was on the east side of what's called the Central Basin Platform. If those minerals would have been literally 4 miles west, they would be worth a fortune.
Wow.
Instead, they're worthless, right? So, you know, I tried to, in a equitable way, explain to these mineral owners that, like, how these plays work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, you know, maybe didn't get over the hump or trust me that I was telling them the right things. And I said, look, selling's not for everybody. Like, you know, but if you want to diversify, it's not a bad option to have.
Right.
And so, so 2009, we did that. We spent a couple $1 million. I cut my teeth. I learned what worked and what didn't work. And then, you know, proceeded to start to go and do that more and more. And so I moved to, you know, I was in East Texas and Louisiana for 2 years living in a hotel. I then went down to South Texas to the Eagleford and was like down in Atascosa County and that area down there buying some minerals. Went up to Kansas and had a stint in Sumner County, had some fun up there with shout out to Wildcat Chuck Motter. And then I went to, I'd been doing it and I had started, I was fortunate enough to like start making some profit. I started participating in the mm-hmm, deals mm-hmm. and I was like, well, you know, I'm kind of making these mentors of mine some money. I want to put some money in.
Sure.
And so, one day I'm sitting at lunch and I'm with one of my best friends, a guy named Andrew Lawson, who's also, in the mineral business. And, you know, long story short, I meet some folks that Andrew's working with and we decide that we're going to go up to the Utica Shale in Ohio. And at the time it was just like, into 2012. Mm-hmm. And like they drilled a couple test wells. Now what happens in these plays is when a lot of these plays, they drilled some test wells and they might have been kind of promising, but the plays totally busted out.
Yeah.
Like the ultimate busted play was like the Mississippi Lime, and then the Klein Shale was an ultimate bust. Mm-hmm. You might have even heard of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like that's just how it works. So the play was still in its infancy, but that's if you're going to go and roll the dice and buy minerals, that's kind of the time to go. Now, you might go lay out some money and it might end up not being worth much, or it could be worth more, right?
Right.
So we went up there. I moved to a small town called St. Clairsville, close to a bunch of Amish communities. And, we kind of had very bare bones, like Spartan apartment. And I think we leased an office from a farmer. It was like a greenhouse or something, you know, like, and spent a year up there. It was the coldest winter in 20 years in Ohio. And we had a blast. And we used to go to Pittsburgh and Columbus on the weekends. And it was with some very, very close friends. Shout out to Andrew Lawson, James Lawson, John Pinnell. Those guys were up there with me. It was like fun, you know. We were competing against some of the guys back here in Dallas and Houston that you knew who they were, but my MO was always like, well, I'll go live up there and meet these farmers. So I'm playing poker with the local landowners. You know, Bobby Shugart introduces me to his friends. And Shugart's like the largest landowner in Ohio. We're playing basketball with Shugart during the week. He's totally whooping our butt. I think he played college basketball. But anyways, like that was the MO. It's like, let's go up, become the guys that if people do want to divest minerals, we're going to close the deal.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I give you my word, and hopefully, you know, like now, not everything goes exactly like you drop. Sometimes the title bust, or, you know, you got this due diligence, or sometimes the mineral owners change their mind. But we tried to shoot people straight. We ended up deploying $48 million in 180 grassroots acquisitions. And, you know, you want to talk about how to not have a good work-life balance?
Yeah.
Do that with a three, four-man team. I was staying up till 2 a.m. every night eating stinking Burger King every day, so like my body was like really not what you know, like not, yeah. Didn't like it, but we had a lot of fun. And you know, that was the project that really kind of took my career to the next level. And so after that, teamed up with a great group of gentlemen up in Oklahoma City called Map Royalty. These are some of the straightest shooting guys you've ever met in your life. Literally, and I kid you not, this when I talk about handshake deal.
Yeah.
These guys did $1 billion worth of acquisitions on handshakes.
Wow.
And so, like, when they said it was a deal, it didn't matter if oil went down 50% and it was a 2-month due diligence. That was the deal they were doing. Right. And it was basically on an email. And so, you know, that's a special thing to get to see.
It's almost unheard of anymore.
I mean, it's unheard of. Yeah. I mean, it's unheard of. But, you know, so a tip of the cap to the guys at MAP for giving us a chance. We went up to the Marcellus and were buying with MAP. And, you know, that's a lot of endowment money. You know, they quietly were, you know, are one of the biggest mineral companies in the world. And I moved when I got done with Ohio. I took 3 months off and took this giant road trip, like went to Yellowstone and Glacier and West Coast Redwood. I mean, I was burnt out, you know, and I was I said to myself, like, you know, I'd kind of neglected some friendships and like I didn't spend any time with my family. And I was like, well, that I did really well, but like I don't necessarily like I don't have to worry about money as much. But I didn't really have, you know, I had fun with while I was up there, but I'd lost all these connections.
Sure.
So I said to myself, I don't think I want to go travel again and do that. I think I just want to stay in Dallas. And so, you know, proceeded to think about what I wanted to do next. And, you know, I had this idea of like, well, that'd be cool to like build our own mineral fund here. That way I can stay in Dallas and I can hire guys like I was to go out and buy the minerals.
Right.
And so I teamed up with two very dear friends, Blake Bowen and Joseph Cora. That was called Flatiron Energy Partners, which, by the way, talking about the Flatirons.
Oh, wow. There you go.
I came up with the name for that when I was hiking in the Flatirons one time.
Well, all right. Abby will be pleased.
I was hiking with old Wildcat Motter, and I was like, that'd be kind of a cool name for an entity one day. So
nice.
I then, you know, was like, well, this would be nice to stay in town. So I teamed up with Blake and Joseph, and Blake and I went to high school together, and Joseph's one of the smartest people you'll ever meet. And we'd been roommates. Joseph was a all-American golfer at Alabama, and Blake and I went to Oklahoma State together. And so, so we teamed up and formed Gallatin Natural Resources, named it after the Gallatin River up in Montana. Okay. The story behind that was I was up there fly fishing the Gallatin one day, and Blake and Joseph called me and said, all right, we're in to do this thing. And so we called it Gallatin. And, that was when I was on that 3-month little road trip. So, that was Gallatin. We teamed up with MAP. We start going. We're in Marcellus. We're going and blowing. And then all of a sudden, you know, industry shifts and MAP's like, hey, unfortunately, we can't buy any more minerals. We were supposed to go up there and spend like $80 million, and we ended up spending $15 million. Well, the way that deal worked is we only made money if we spent money.
Well, yeah.
So it was a big punch to the gut, and we kind of had a, you know, it was like, man, what are we going to do? You know, but we had all this experience. We had some cash. And so we went out, we decided we were going to go out to West Texas, and which is the most competitive place to buy minerals in the world. And we went out there and over, you know, the course of 10 months, it was hard, but we scratched it out and we made a pretty good living, you know, buying minerals. And we were essentially buying minerals, and through my 10 years in the mineral business, I'd kind of, you know, met some like-minded guys that ran the mineral funds for groups like Apollo and KKR, right? Yeah. And well, those guys don't buy grassroots deals. They've got their own funders, but they like to buy deals directly if they can.
Yeah.
And so we would, you know, we would offer a fair price to the mineral owners and be as competitive as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And then turn around and kind of make a deal with one of those groups, and we'd make like a profit, right? And so that's what we did. And then, you know, it came to this point, and I'll never forget, I was down in NAEP in 2017, and the mineral business at that time, like no one else was buying minerals anywhere else. There literally, like, there was 100 companies chasing these 6 counties out in West Texas.
Yeah.
So it had just gotten real combative, in the Utica, I'm up there competing against like my friend Chris Caffey and John Brumley, and not that I know John, but Chris is a friend, and you know, there's other groups, and we're you know, they'd beat us on a deal and be like, all right, Chris, you got that one right, you know, like, but out there it just got so combative. I mean, you'd put 10 deals under purchase agreement, three of them would bust title out, you know, four of them, you know, some attorney getting involved and try and get the deal backed out of, you know, I mean, it just, when I was, I'll never forget, I was in Amherst, Massachusetts on Good Friday in 2017. Mm-hmm. And there was an attorney who had, you know, I had offered, we'd offered a price to a woman who was like a widower, and it was actually out in Pecos County, and it's near where my great grandfather lived. Mm-hmm. And we'd offered her more money per acre than anyone's ever received, like in that part of the country, on a price per acre basis. And, you know, back to like, I'm not going to get into this whole thing, but long story short, I had to go up because the attorney is like, my client's not going to close, you're screwing her over. And I was like, sir, I can guarantee you. I said, go call everybody in the mineral business. This is an extremely generous price. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he convinces this nice lady from Amherst to try and breach the purchase agreement. And I had to show up on a Good Friday with a $1.6 million check in Amherst and then proceed to get held up for $40,000. So, oh, wow. You know, like, wow. It's like, you know, someone goes to 7-Eleven and holds up the clerk for $5 and they go to jail to 10 years. But I get an attorney to steal $40,000 from us, and he calls me after the thing's over. He's like, hey, I just wanted to tell you, no hard feelings. And I was like, hey, buddy, like, there's kind of some hard feelings here. Yeah. Like, you know, and so, but that was when I felt like, you know what, this is not giving me life anymore. It wasn't really fun. I'd done pretty well. And that's, you know, don't know if we want to get into Uncommon Fellows, but like, when I was living in Denver, we put together 30,000 acres of leasehold in the Niobrara, and that was with Cheeseman and Brett. We were having that there again. Chuck, you know, Wildcat Motter was up there then with me. We were living in the Candlewood Hotel in Centennial. That was a fun year, you know, going to the mountains and skiing and stuff.
Right.
I'm losing my train of thought. What was I saying?
So the attorney basically holds you up.
Yeah,
for
the attorney.
Grand,
so like, so when, you know, Ohio, Colorado, East Texas, that's fun. Yeah. All of a sudden it's becoming like, this is like literally sucking the life out of me.
Right.
And so, and when I was in Denver, I had this idea, being a person of like a transcendent faith, and you and I've talked a little bit about it. This kind of gets to a whole different story, but I really liked, I like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and these guys. And I loved like the fact that they had this meeting called the Inklings, and they would meet at the Eagle and Child in Oxford. And it'd be like, it wasn't just like Christians. It'd be like their Muslim buddies and Jews. And they would get in there and they'd have beers. And they like had this robust kind of what I call a robust, compassionate conversation about literature and art, what's going on in the world. And I was like, man, the idea just popped in my head. It's like, what if you could have got those guys together and send them to the mountains for 5 days and videoed all this conversation. Like, how cool would have a piece of like culture and history and all this stuff? And like, what could we have learned from them?
Right.
And so the idea just popped in my head then. It's like, well, what if you tried it today? And I was like, I remember thinking at the time, like, I could never do that. I don't know how to make a film. I'm in the oil business. You know, those guys would never even all do it. The guys that I imagined. But that's where it's 2017. And I'm debating this thing, you know, should I get out of the oil business? Should I not? I'm praying about it. And I know that like, it's going to seem like super crazy to all my friends if I go and try and make this documentary. And there's like, you have in the back of your head, like, what's this going to make me look like? I'm, you know, like,
it's kind of like when you decide to start a podcast.
who the hell do you think you are?
I love that. I love that you mentioned that. I didn't realize that was Tim Ferriss's story. I listened to Tim, and the fact that he just like had a brain fart one day, and was like, hey, sometimes just have an idea and like step out into the wilderness and go after
it. But seriously, right? I mean, how many times do you find that? And this is what I. And this is great that we're getting into this, Austin, because how many times do And you, listener, I'm talking to you, all of us, we get this idea in our brain. I want to go do that. And I describe it, like I told you, I wrote this book. And one of the stories I love in that book is they used to train small baby elephants for the circus. They would tie them to a stake when they were really young. They could not move the stake. The size of the rope, now the length of the rope, I'm sure, changed over the course of time. The size of the stake never changed. Till all of a sudden, this over a ton of animal, you know, being that is a grown elephant would not pull the stake out of the ground because mentally they didn't realize they could pull the stake out. How many times do we as human beings we go,
wow,
I want to do something, but we create these arbitrary stakes in our mind because of what you just said. I told Abby, my youngest daughter, when I told her I wanted to start a podcast, I wanted to relaunch my book, and I wanted to do public speaking. I said, you know, I feel like I'm telling people I'm going to go join the circus, you know? But the thing is, go join the freaking circus. The only person that's stopping you is you. We create those stakes. So yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that story.
Absolutely.
You know, especially in your case where you had had the monetary success, you had scratched the entrepreneurial itch, you'd done all those things, but then you still had that revelation at the end of the day, okay, that was fun, but now it's not. What can I do next? And then something else pops in your brain. So I love that, man. I mean, that puts you and I right square on the same page, because I'm that guy. My wife tells me all the time, she says, I love your dreaming heart. And I'm like, man, I'm not going to quit dreaming. If somebody thinks I'm stupid for doing it, guess what? There's a lot of people out there that do a lot of crazy things that at first appeared very, very stupid, right?
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, amen to that. And then like we were saying earlier, I mean, I've always tried to like, at least not this quote has at least guided my, you know, you really have to understand, like, what is it that, and not in a selfish way, but like, it goes back to like, don't ask yourself what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive.
Yes.
And go do that.
That's it.
Because the world needs more people that have come alive.
I love that.
I think it's David Thurman. And so I wasn't coming alive anymore. And so, you know, it was, I mean, there was 2 months, I'm literally just losing sleep, right? I'm like, this is crazy. I'm going to go make a documentary. Are you kidding me? And like, you know, I start like telling some people I'm thinking about it, and they're like, literally people probably had this thought, like, I think he might be kind of losing, right? You know, like we're making pretty good money. Yeah. And so anyways, I was down at NAEP in 2017, which NAEP is like this giant, you know, it's 5,000 guys from the energy business down in one place. It's a freaking blast, you know, like everyone's having parties. It's like all your best friends, you know, you see all your competitors, you're like, you know, and you're like ribbing each other. And, you know, I'll never forget the moment that I had been feeling this inside me, like, Austin, the time's come to step out, you know? There's kind of this cadence to NAEP, like there's this part. And like Thursday night, everybody goes to Four Seasons late. And I was about to walk into the Four Seasons at like 11 o'clock. And I literally walked in the door and I looked and there's all my colleagues. And I go, I just had to turn around and walk out. And I said, I'm out. I was officially out. So yeah, that happened. And then that was the moment that I was like, okay, if I don't do this, if I don't try it, if I don't give this thing a shot, if I don't step into the wilderness, when I'm 80, I will look back and I will just regret it.
Yep. Amen.
And so I was like, this thing, you know, I'm saying to myself, like, you're talking to yourself and you're going, you never made a film. You're going to go try and get Richard Dawkins, Tim Keller, you know, Rowan Williams, to do a documentary. You've never made one. You're telling yourself like okay, God, this is not going to happen, you know, like, but I'll go try it and crop probably crash and burn, right? And, you know, like, I want to give a shout out to, you know, my partners, Blake Bowen, who I actually just got done having lunch with, sorry, and Joseph Sikora, very graciously let me exit the company. And that was hard, I think, because, right, we built this thing and, you know, it just must have seemed so crazy.
Sure.
Right. And so I want to thank them for allowing me to leave, you know?
Yeah.
And when I left, I knew it was the right decision, you know, like you get. So anyways, that's my story in the oil patch. Like, I love the oil business. It's some of the greatest people in America, and people want to say what they will about it. Some of the highest integrity people in the country.
Right.
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 And now they're like any industry, there's shysters out there. Right. But that business was special for me.
Yeah.
And let's move on. I'm getting emotional talking about it.
Yeah. But see, that's, I love that. I love that. And it's so funny whenever you, when you talk to folks that they started something from scratch and they produce something, that it is an emotional thing. I was, there's a, guy that owns a forestry company that I'm actually going to be doing some advisory work for, that same thing, man, 40 years ago, he started this company that he has stuck with, and he does love the business, and it was him and his wife from nothing, and now he's successful, and you get him to talk about it, it is a very emotional endeavor. But okay, so now you're to the point where you know that that chapter is closing, because I got to believe that it becomes at that point where literally that if the passion's gone, it's just about the money. And I'll tell anybody that will listen to me, it's like you and I talked about offline before we got started, chasing money, it does not fulfill. It just won't. That's a recurring theme on this podcast of people. Rick Campbell, who I interviewed a while back, I mean, you know, he had a $70 million exit on one deal, and that paled in comparison to what his oil and gas businesses have done. And he's like, you know, I was happiest when I was about to go bankrupt and trying to stretch $800 a month. You know, it's not about the money. But then, so you have that, you walk away, and then does Tom and Sherry's come next? I mean, when do you start just going into other true, raw entrepreneurial ventures, you know, to where, and was it a deal like where you were going to go build something, it caught your interest, or people came to you and said, Austin, I got a great idea, we need some capital, and you jumped in? How did that transition take place? And then, yes, we have to get into Uncommon Fellows.
Well, the genesis for me leaving the oil patch was Uncommon Fellows. So,
okay.
You know, one thing you learn when you do different ventures, if you're not all in,
yep,
they're not gonna work, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's where, like, you know, when Andrew Lawson and I decided to go up to the Utica, we literally just said, we literally have to pack up our car and drive tomorrow and move there,
yep,
right?
Yep.
You have to show up.
You do.
And so I took this approach to Uncommon Fellows as if I would a venture in the mineral business. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be laser focused on it. So I cleared all the plate, and I was like, okay, I've got to go try and pitch these guys on this idea that was very hairy and nebulous at the time. My first deck I ever put together, if I go back and look at it, probably should be burned. It's, you know, terrible, but it's amazing how you start out. It's like you start out with this giant lump of clay, and it's like, okay, I think that's a good lump of clay, and it's a good idea. Some people tell you, like, yeah, I like that lump of clay. That looks okay. Right. And then, like, you start going, and people are like, actually, that you might want to chip off that. And, like, it's like if you allow people to start helping you mold the idea.
Yes. Yes.
Like we were saying, and this is a quote from Rowan Williams, like, God has meant us to learn in dialogue. Like, I can't tell you how many people have saved the Uncommon Fellows Project. This is like a whole nother podcast. Like, yeah. Almost the story behind this is, it's incredible. Like, how it's all come together. It's not me doing it. You know, there's a greater force of love in the world, I think, driving it.
Yeah.
But
we've touched so much on it. Just let's talk about what Uncommon Fellows is, because I think it is one of the most timely it's a timely project. I think it's an important project. So describe to the listener what it is, and then let's kind of unpack this story of how it came to where it is right now.
Well, anytime you make, you have a business venture or whatever. You're identifying problems, right?
Absolutely.
And I think a gigantic and massive problem, not just in America, but in the world today, is that everybody hates their enemies, mm-hmm. right? And everybody's in these echo chambers, and it's like everybody's the other. And it's like, well, we know that we've got the right answer, so kind of screw those guys, you know? And so what we're seeing the fruit of that, like, look at what's happening. It's not good.
Yep.
And so, you know, part of it for me, like when I graduated college, and this was right before I got in the oil business, I moved to New Zealand for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I was, I bought a cheap car. I was on the South Island. I grew a big beard out. I was by myself, and I was working on farms and stuff. It was actually a blast. It's a cool program called WOOF. It's like willing workers on organic farms. You basically get to go and stay at a farm for free, work for 4 hours, and then you get to eat and live there for free. So, oh, wow. Like, I traveled around the South Island for 5.5 months trying to teach myself fly fish. Did a terrible job at that. but I had a blast, you know, living out of my car, camping out, staying in hostels, meeting all these people from all over the world. As a part of that journey, I was like, well, like you were saying earlier about, well, if truth is true, it'll stand up.
Absolutely.
I was like, I went into it and I'm like, well, I'm going to try and read things that are against how I grew up. Because mm-hmm. I said, if truth's true, it'll stand up. Well, that culminates with me reading, you know, going into Barnes & Noble in Auckland, New Zealand, and looking at this number one New York Times bestseller called God Delusion by Richard Dawkins.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, Austin, if you really want to challenge yourself, there's the challenge. And I was kind of scared to read it. I wasn't that scared.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I kind of made a compromise. I said, well, I think it'd be sacrilegious if I bought the book. So I'll just read it in Barnes & Noble for 2 nights. So I sat in Barnes & Noble and I read it for like 3 nights, like 6 hours a night. And I mean, I got done with that book. And you know, I'd had some, like, if you don't have doubts, then you need to check yourself,
right?
Absolutely. If you think you're right, got it all down, you need to go check yourself,
right?
Because if God is real, he's way bigger than anybody could ever imagine.
Absolutely.
In your mind. So right now, I'm not here to like preach or anything. So let me go ahead. Story, but I got done reading that book. And it's 11 p.m. and I walk out into the street of Auckland, New Zealand, and the streets are deserted. And I'll never forget the feeling. Like, you know, you grow up your whole life and you think you're just right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy smokes. Not only am I probably not right about some stuff, I could be totally wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, that is such a humbling and like scary place to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that started this journey, and as I'm living in these small towns doing oil and gas, well, I don't have anything to do at night. It's a small town, like 1,000 people, so I'm watching YouTubes, and I'm, you know, learning about C.S. Lewis. I'm watching Christopher Hitchens. I'm reading Tim Keller books, you know, and so, like, I enjoy that stuff. Like, I enjoy the intellectual grappling of
absolutely.
It, right? Like, absolutely. And so, for me, like, this was something that I felt called to work on, but also it was life-giving. So anyways, that's how I get to going to work on Uncommon Fellows. And, you know,
hey folks, I hope you enjoy this episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Before you go, I wanted to let you know where you can find us out there on the interwebs. You can go to show notes as well as listen to all the past episodes and look for upcoming shows at texttitans.blog. Also, that has all the different formats that you can listen to the show on if you go there. So texttitans.blog. You can also go to jasonrightnow.com. That has not only a link to the podcast, but it also has a link to my Make Your Own Rules blog that I think you'll enjoy. So please check that out. Also, it has information about my executive coaching business, speaking, and anything else like that. So jasonrightnow.com. jasonwrightnow.com. That's literally just my name, jasonwrightnow.com. On Twitter, I'm at jasonwrighttx. I would really appreciate a follow. I have not been a big Twitter user, so I need you guys to help me with that. So please take the time to go out to jasonwrighttx, find me, and follow me. I'm trying to get more active with it. And so if you'll engage with me, I'll try to do a better job of engaging with you. So I would appreciate that. And then on Instagram, I'd really appreciate a follow there. I'm at jasonwrightnow. Again, my name, now. So please follow me on Instagram. And then on Facebook, I'm also at jasonwrighttx. So check us out there. I'm also on LinkedIn, so look for me there. I try to use as many platforms as possible to let you know about upcoming shows, past shows, and then also just anything that I find interesting. I'm trying to push it out and get better with the social media. So please check us out there and follow us. I would be most grateful. And also, please do not forget, it means the world to me for you to go to iTunes, give us a rating. Right now, we've got that 5-star rating. I'm hoping to hold that. Please, please, please. The comments that people are writing are so very kind. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. And that's how we keep moving up in the ranks. And right now, we're crushing it with downloads. The show has really had incredible feedback thanks to you guys. So I'm grateful. Please keep that momentum going by giving us a review on iTunes. Thanks so much and have a great day. And as always, I could not be more grateful for you listening. Thanks.